The Guardian.
Hello, it's Guardian Football Weekly time with me, Max Rushton. Alongside me are Wilson and McInnes and a Glenn Denning. The four of us might have defended better at Anfield as Liverpool put four past Arsenal. Will this finally be the moment that Arsenal fans begin to criticise their manager? Spurs finally win at Wembley? No, they forgot about injury time. They may never ever win there again. Chelsea's crisis is over. Miguel Britos does Kung Fu. Aguero versus the police. And Slaven Bilic gets quieter and quieter as West Ham ship three at Newcastle. Plus a roundup from Spain with Sid. We'll go to Italy and Germany. All that, corrections and apologies, and some constructive feedback to finish off. And that is today's Guardian Football Weekly. Jonathan Wilson, hello.
Hello.
Mark Cole writes on Twitter, can we have an update on Jonathan's cricketing and or his new shoes, please?
Yes, I scored another 74 on Saturday. So having never scored a half century till this season, I've now got three. Since I got the insoles, I'm averaging 79.5 with the bat. But my bowling isn't as good. And I've taken three wickets of 40 with the ball since I got the insoles.
But it doesn't matter anymore, doesn't it? You're a specialist batsman.
Well, it looks like I've become a batting all-rounder rather than a bowling all-rounder, yeah. But okay. More importantly, on Saturday, I took the winning catch at slip off the third last ball of the game in scenes of high drama.
Did the cordon embrace you?
I embraced a very small child who was fielding at point and he sort of collapsed under my weight. It was kind of very strange. I went a bit mad for about 30 seconds.
Went Raheem Sterling, did you? Run into
I went
the crowd.
Full Raheem Sterling, yeah.
You weren't sent off, though. Well, that didn't matter then.
Didn't matter by then.
But you are suspended for the next game. Paul, good result for Norwich there. Just the four you let in at Millwall.
Yeah, that was actually going to make the bulk of my championship roundup. But it caused me to have a depressive incident on Saturday night. Really? I had to go to bed at 10 o'clock with an eye mask on.
Oh, why the eye mask?
Just because to block out all sense, you know, it's total sensory deprivation.
Do the Norwich fans sing Fark out or
no? They or have this. Fark they off. Have this fart. They have this Fark life. They do.
Life.
And then the line is all the Germans, so many Germans, which I think is kind of both cheeky and a little bit xenophobic, which I think sums up our supporter base wonderfully.
Okay, Barry, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
You've had two. You missed two pods, Barry.
Yeah.
People started wondering if you had like a bad back or a cold.
I've always said I remain dedicated to Football Weekly until such time as I no longer remain dedicated to Football Weekly. But I'm here.
You are.
And unlike, you know, certain want-away footballers, I will put my shoulder to the wheel and give it 150%.
If you were offered 50p more per pod to go elsewhere, would that be enough?
No.
A pound?
No.
It would be a pound more than you currently get.
We'll find out what Barry's price is eventually. Shall we start then with part one? A London club board are having an emergency meeting this morning to discuss the future of their manager. And it's not Arsenal. It's Frank de Boer. We'll get on to him in a little bit. Let's start with Liverpool 4, Arsenal 0. Gary Neville, brother of Barry's nemesis, Phil. He said, put all the Arsenal players on the transfer list. Thierry Henry said he didn't want to be there. Arthur on Twitter, Arthur Blackpudding, says, would a Chelsea-Leicester-style downing of tools force Kroenke to get rid of Wenger? How much did you enjoy the Arsenal defensive performance, Barry?
I enjoyed it very much because I could sort of see it coming. Their performance was simultaneously shocking while not being entirely surprising at all. If you look at the Arsenal team that lost 3-1 against Liverpool in the second half of last season, I think it was late March, early April, 10 players who started or finished that game started or finished yesterday's game. And, you know, as the definition of insanity is, if you keep doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results, then, you know, it's not going to happen. I thought Arsenal's team selection was bizarre. You know, you make these two marquee signings during the summer and then neither of those players start the game, which just seems very odd.
Paul McInnes.
Well, I think there is a lot about the team selection that's wrong, and not just the selection itself, but the positions that people are playing in. Bellerin got robbed three times, I think, out of the four goals.
The third goal is unbelievable that Bellerin is the furthest Arsenal player back and he's 20 yards into Liverpool's half. And he miscontrols it. Look, everyone makes individual errors.
Yeah, but I mean, that miscontrol, it was sort of a really sort of flappy miscontrol. You, if you know you're the last man back and you know you're that far forward, you make sure you get something on it. You know, you don't have a sort of a vague wag of a leg at it.
But and no when you're a right-footed fullback and you're playing left wing-back, you know, how accustomed are you to making those actions to try and get the ball under control?
I don't
anyway.
Care. You're a professional footballer. You can get your body on a ball.
Yeah, no, I understand that. But at the same time, you are raising the risk of these sorts of things happening by putting somebody in that position.
But he wasn't on the left at that time. My question is, which professional football team or even amateur football team down to really low league amateur football teams set up with their deepest player 20 yards into the opposition half? It's just that's
well, especially against a team as quick as Liverpool.
Yeah, I mean, doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, but none of it made any sense. I mean, I think the Lacazette thing is odd in that, you know, he was taken off against Stoke the previous week having played pretty well, looked pretty dangerous, and the reason given was to allow Walcott to put in crosses for Giroud, a thing that has literally never happened in 3 years, or it's happened maybe once in 3 years. And then he doesn't start this game. I mean, what's going on there?
Well, the excuse Arsene Wenger gave was that he's taken time to acclimatise to Premier League football. But you acclimatise by playing Premier League football. That's how you get used to it.
And also, a game like that, you know Liverpool are really quick. So sit men back behind the ball, have your quick lad up front to chase everything.
But you also, you know, if you know Liverpool are vulnerable at the back, you know they're not great on set pieces or deliveries, so maybe try and cause them a problem in that way.
I mean, Jonathan wrote an article about Arsenal's lack of defensive backbone and the lack of protection they're afforded by Ramsey and Granit Xhaka it was published on Thursday, and it was remarkably prescient because
it was also just reporting exactly what happened last year. So I mean, it was prescient in some ways, but it was also just reporting exactly what happened last year and 2 years before that. So,
but there's this weird thing where teams that aren't of Arsenal stature, say Stoke and West Brom, etc., they all run a lot and they put the miles in and they work really hard. And then teams above Arsenal stature, like Barcelona, Real Madrid, put the work in and all. You know, they don't have the ball and run around a lot. And then there's Arsenal in the middle somewhere where their players are too good to run around, but not good enough to run around. I just don't...
Yeah, well, quite a few of them yesterday just couldn't be bothered. It was quite apparent they didn't care. And that's perhaps the most worrying thing. You know, Liverpool deserve immense credit because they were outstanding and I think they'd have beaten anyone yesterday. But the manner in which Arsenal capitulated should be a source of huge concern. And... it's really difficult to see them bouncing back from this. You know, we say this all the time and about Arsenal, you know, it's just nice to have to be able to say it with a different host in the chair.
Another thing about, you know, about this game was that Liverpool are a great attacking force. Liverpool, you know, the second time in a week, they really tore their defence apart. Arsenal are no longer the best... even on their day, the best attacking unit in the league. And I'm not sure that they've necessarily adjusted to accept that either. This idea that you can just go and outplay people because you've got the best players, that no longer holds true.
Thomas Buckle says, are Liverpool a better team without Coutinho as they play quicker football with less dribbling in midfield? And I think you've made that point earlier in this season, Barry, that Liverpool won't miss Coutinho that much if he does end up...
No, well, I mean, that depends entirely on injuries and the toll they're... busier schedule takes on them this season, but I don't think he'd be a huge loss. They're doing perfectly fine without him. The place they need reinforcements is at the back. They've plenty going forward, you know. There's talk today, I did the rumour mill, that they might be going in for Thomas Lemar from Monaco.
Steal that from Arsenal after doing 4-0. Is there any justice in the world?
Twice in a week. I don't think they particularly need him either, but I would suggest that turning down a huge offer for Coutinho from Barcelona would be an act of insanity.
I mean, I broadly agree with that. I think where they may miss Coutinho is against teams who pack men behind the ball. that Coutinho does have that invention to open up a pack defence in a way I don't think Firmino or Salah or Mane does. So I can see from that point of view where they might miss Coutinho. But I fundamentally agree that if you're getting 140, 150 million for him, yeah. I mean, he's not that good. He's good, but he's, you know, he's a B plus, might become an A player in time. But
like, has he ever been on a team that's won anything?
He won the Under 20 World Cup with Brazil in 2011.
Okay. Just to pick on something, Jonathan, it's no longer A's and B's in your GCSEs. It's a 1-9 ranking, with 9 being good and almost unattainable.
I was referring to A levels.
Okay, fine, that's fine.
Just one stat about Arsenal, which I think is shocking. Only Sunderland have conceded more shots on target in the Premier League this calendar year.
That's a good stat. Paul?
And just one little thing about Liverpool is it's a long season. They'll be playing Champions League. The way Klopp plays requires a lot of intensity from his forward players. He needs more than 3, even if they don't get injured. He needs more than 3 top-class forwards, which is why I was quite interested. This is me reading far too much into body language, but Sturridge scores his goal. No fancy haircut anymore. Simple, straightforward haircut. No fancy celebration, just a finger in the air.
He means business.
But if he understands that he has to, if he is not going to be the main man in this Liverpool side at any point, but he might have a place as a squad player, then I think that's a good option.
Well, I think that's where Lamar comes in as well, that he would seem to me to be direct cover for Wijnaldum, who, I mean, you know, Chan, I guess, was the standout player yesterday, but I thought Wijnaldum was excellent as well. And yeah, the point you make about the distance they have to run, the energy they have to expend, having Lamar's cover for that would be useful and makes sense.
In the Champions League, they've got Sevilla, Maribor and Spartak Moscow, which is a friendly group. One question, they rested Mignolet. Is this Klopp just saw it was Arsenal and he was a home banker and he'll bring Mignolet back for the Stoke game?
So he said, but it seems slightly odd to me. I mean, does he really need a rest this early in the season with international break when he's not going to play because Courtois is going to play?
Well, obviously not, huh?
Yeah.
So it is some sort of message, but I'm not sure what. I mean, Carrius nearly got robbed twice with a ball at his feet, didn't he?
But he looks really calm after he's almost completely balled up, isn't he? Arsenal's Europa League group, FC Köln, Red Star Belgrade and Spartak Borisov. Look, the only saving grace for Arsenal this season is they've got more points at home than Spurs have. Spurs, who drew 1-1 with Burnley. Burnley have taken 4 points from Chelsea and Spurs away. Well done, them. We can't call it a curse or a hoodoo. We can't say Harry Kane's never scored in August, but he's never scored in August. Next at Wembley for Spurs is Borussia Dortmund, so that's easy.
He has scored once in August.
Oh,
it wasn't
did he?
For Spurs.
Was it for Millwall or something?
It was England under 21.
Oh, okay.
Well, has he scored for Spurs?
He scores in the Europa League qualifiers.
Ah, okay. In the Premier League then. Anyway,
I was there.
Okay.
And I'm a bit of a hoodologist.
Okay.
I've written quite a few articles about hoodoos.
Okay.
And I've come to believe in it.
Okay.
I think it's real. And I think it's real not because of anything particular about Wembley so much as the fact that the idea, the meme, has got into the Spurs players' heads. And I think what happened yesterday, it was a tough game. You know, they knew it was going to be a tough game against Burnley. Burnley defended excellently in the first half. And they got lucky to get the opener. The ball sort of shanked off of Ben Mee and fell to Dele Alli. His first shot was blocked, took the second one, scored. Dele Alli barely celebrated. It's a bit like, okay, this is par. Now we've got to go and show that, now we've got to score more goals to show that we're the better team here. And I think the Spurs really wanted to lay the hoodoo. Mm. They really wanted to kind of go, show we are big enough, we're a big enough team, we're big enough players to cope with this and we're going to show you. And they just stopped, they kind of didn't take their foot off the pedal, but they stopped concentrating. They wanted to have great score, some great goals. They wanted to play some flairful football. They kept pushing on, and they got about 3 or 4 warnings in the last last 5 minutes of the match before finally they got sprung. Trippier was just inside the halfway line, got sprung by Wood. Robbie Brady laid a beautiful ball on, and that was 1-1. And you know, Pochettino's kicking his water bottle. I think, you know, Pochettino then brings on Nedison Sanchez after that. You know, he could have shut up shop. But I think there was mentally, they weren't in the right place, Spurs.
Martin says, why do Spurs delay their transfer business when it ruins the start to the season? Points in August, 2015-16, 3 from 12, 16-17, 5 from 9, 17-18, 4 from 9.
Don't think that's got anything to do with it.
Nothing at all?
No. I mean, surely if they haven't bought anybody, they're better placed to make a good start of the season because there's nobody getting acclimatised to the team.
I think the reason they do delay the transfer business, whether or not it has any effect on their start of the season, is that Dan Levy just can't help himself. He's so obsessed with getting the best deal he can when buying and selling players that he deliberately leaves it late, particularly when buying. But in terms of the hoodoo as well, it's natural that visiting teams to Wembley will raise their game playing in that environment, I think.
Mark says, with Kane still coming up dry, is it time for Crouch Sturridge up top for England, Jonathan?
No.
Spurs Mike.
Sorry, Nick Ames just showed me, I didn't see this game, but Nick Ames showed me the Robbie Brady assist for Chris Wood's goal, and he reckoned, and I wouldn't disagree with him, just his crossfield pass that took out four Spurs players, and it was literally, well, oh, no, not literally, but like threading, you know, a needle. It was an unbelievable pass.
He'd already done it once.
Yeah.
You know, he'd
when
done
Lewis
it once
came through to
slide tackling. Yeah.
But again, you think about the Chelsea game for Spurs. Lloris holds onto that ball and they don't concede that goal. Before that had happened, Kane and Winks were up top and just put it in the corner and hold it. Don't try. It's exactly the point you make about trying to score some glorious second goal.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's concentration.
Can I just make a point about Burnley?
Of course, yeah, do.
Just because I'm a big, big fan of Burnley. Not just because I had a bit of banter with Sean Dyche in the press conference afterwards. But when I said, you know, talk us through the double substitution, because he went two up top when they went 1-0 down. And he planned to do it anyway, he says. And I said to him, what about it? He says, oh, it's genius. And he goes, oh, no, that's just a joke. It's just a joke, lads. Don't take it the wrong way. He's a very funny guy. But, you know, the Spurs had 25 efforts on goal and an XG of 2.47, which is reasonably high. And Burnley let them have those shots. You know, they get so condensed when they're defending. You know, it's not quite so many the numbers of bodies behind the ball, but how compact they are and how tight they are and how everybody knows their position. It's really impressive to watch. I think it's different from a Pulis style. They really kind of go like a transformer and then kind of slowly work their way out again. And I think, you know, their home form will be interesting to watch this season because I think it will be difficult for them to be as good as they were last year. But their away form is already a lot better.
Chelsea 2, Everton 0. The crisis is over at Stamford Bridge. We should mention Mo Besic, who asked to play for Everton less than 24 hours after his father was the victim of a shooting. Mayo, his dad, was shot in the hand and leg on Saturday afternoon following a dispute in Bosnia in which he was hit by two bullets. He is recovering and Besic is off there to visit him. On the pitch, it looked a bit easy for Chelsea, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, I was at that game and it was, it could have been a big story if Chelsea had failed to win, but it was utterly routine. Yeah, team looked pretty early on and never looked in any danger. And I mean, the one thing I would say was Morata, although he obviously scored one and set one up, which means he's now scored twice this season and got two assists, he didn't look entirely comfortable with balls played over distance to him. That sort of target man role that Diego Costa, I think perhaps we didn't quite give him the credit he deserved for that. I'm not sure Morata really fits that. So I wouldn't be surprised if Chelsea go in for Llorente this week. I think that's quite likely to happen.
And what a beautiful man. Changing Llorente for Costa is, you know, that's extraordinary. I mean, Costa may be rugged, but look at Llorente's eyes. Paul, are you going to disagree with this?
Well, no, I'm just going to add to it because the only note I've got on this game is because I knew people would pay more attention to it than me was I think Alvaro Morata is very handsome. That's the only thing I had to say on this game because I think he is. I think he's classic leading man, good looks.
Okay. I'm compared to Llorente, where?
Well, I think he's more handsome.
Wow. In the course of writing the rumour about today, I stumbled across, because the Llorente to Swansea was quite a prominent one, I stumbled across a picture of Fernando and his wife. And while stunningly beautiful, I would have to say his wife is still punching above her weight.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay.
Oh, even though she's gorgeous.
Yeah, it would be impossible to compete with Fernando. Chelsea also potentially in for the normal-looking Danny Drinkwater, potentially Ross Barkley and Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain as well. Do they need one, two, three of them?
I think three will come in.
Really?
Yeah, I think Drinkwater, Llorente, and one other.
This Drinkwater hasn't featured for Leicester this season, has he?
No, and I can see he's sort of the right player for that role. They just need a body to kind of to slot in at the back of midfield. And I thought it was interesting Fabregas played yesterday. I guess, yeah, helping Bakayoko get over the injury. But I think it also suggested that Conte didn't really fear Everton that much.
Yeah, that's right.
Is this a sign now that Everton are going to be once again not good enough to trouble the top six, or too good for everyone beneath?
Probably.
Them?
I mean, I think that was always going to be the case. But they were a bit one pace yesterday, and it's a bit. You know, it was. Yeah, the word you used, easy, was that was what it was. It was just sort of. There was never a moment of that game when I thought there was a danger of a story breaking out.
Given how bad Arsenal are, though, I think we might have a race for sixth place with Arsenal and Everton.
That's what I think.
Yeah.
And also, you've just got to acknowledge that Everton were off the back of a Thursday night Europa League qualifier.
Chelsea have got Atletico Madrid, Roma and the Carabao Cup in the Champions League in their draw. It was interesting when the draw was made that everyone sort of said, well, Chelsea, that's an easy group. But that's not an easy group, is it?
Roma are interesting this season, aren't they? I'm not sure they've started particularly well.
They got beaten yesterday by Inter.
Yeah, and they played Atalanta the first week, and were a little bit lucky to win 1-0. So
Chelsea have got an easy group in the Champions League. In the Europa League, Everton have got Lyon, Atalanta and Apollon Limassol. Finishing off Sunday's games, West Brom 1, Stoke 1. The only thing I liked out of this was Nick Miller was complaining about it on Twitter. And then he sort of changed channel to watch Sister Act or something, and then actually said, actually, any game is great when a player can score while bursting out laughing, which is what Peter Crouch did for that header. But does anyone have anything interesting to add?
I watched it, and it was pretty much everything I expected West Brom v Stoke to be. I'm disappointed West Brom can now not win the Premier League by winning 38 consecutive matches 1-0. I was rather disappointed in Peter Crouch that he ruined my fantasy. And it wasn't very good.
Jay Rodriguez, great to see him get on the score sheet. Very brave diving header as well for somebody who's been out injured for so long. Kurt Zouma, on the highlights, looked like he was playing quite advanced. Was he given license to sort of roam into midfield? Because they're playing about three, aren't they? Like,
I was on an exercise bike for the whole first half, so I can't really remember.
You really are rubbing it in after mentioning the pan au chocolat. Now with your exercise regimen, it's a new max.
Well, he's rehabbing his knee.
Right, that's the end of part one. We'll be back to talk about Saturday's Premier League, including Sergio Aguero versus the Police and Miguel Britos versus Anthony Knockhart's thigh, all after this short break. Welcome back to part two. Let's start Bournemouth 1, Manchester City 2. The biggest story really is the sending off of Raheem Sterling, and then the viral footage of Sergio Aguero versus the Police. What did you think of that, Jonathan?
I think Sterling was a bit unlucky. I sort of get annoyed by people going, oh, you're not allowed to show emotion. No, you are allowed to show emotion, just in a particular way. I think he was unlucky in that he didn't actually get to the crowd. The crowd came to him. So I don't think he sort of flung himself into the crowd. He was engulfed by the crowd. And I think he was still standing on the edge of the grass. So I think maybe not for the first time Mike Dean might have allowed common sense to prevail. And I guess then there's two issues, two ways of looking at the disturbance. One is, and you know, I think fans often fail to accept this, a lot of fans act like arseholes when they're in a big group together. I don't know if Manchester City fans did. I think only people who are actually there would know that, whether... You know, it's just sort of an unfortunate surge carried him onto the pitch, or whether there was sort of a, I mean, I don't think there's anything malicious about it, but sort of deliberate sort of devilment and provocative behaviour. Stewards have to be able to keep fans off the pitch. But then I think there's also a case that a lot of stewards fairly frequently overreact. At the same time, stewards are often on minimum wage doing a pretty horrible job. Unless it was something we didn't see in that footage, the fan who was being held face down the pitch, that appeared to be an overreaction.
It did. I mean, I was at the Europa League final, and at the end of the game, and I don't know if the TV picks up on this, a lot of the Ajax sort of ultras ripped their seats up and threw them onto the pitch. I'd say 20, 30 seats were thrown onto the pitch, and the Swedish police came out. And okay, they weren't running on the pitch, so it's a slightly different situation. There was a line of Swedish police who just let it all happen. And I was watching that thinking, if that was over here, they'd be in there.
But to be honest, I've seen the same thing at the Den.
Really?
Where Bradford fans, or Millwall fans, were taunting Bradford fans after beating them in the first leg of a playoff semi-final. And the police just filed onto the pitch. There was a line of police horses across the pitch, and they just let them, didn't get involved, and it sort of burnt itself out eventually, you know.
Because you sort of imagine with the City fans that they'd all celebrate. Some might run a bit further on the pitch, and then they'd all just go back. But you're right, you don't know what's happened during the whole game.
I do think, as I mentioned to you yesterday, Sergio Aguero is largely to blame because he could have defused the entire situation by putting the policeman's helmet, which he had in his hand briefly, on his head. And that would have eased the tension immediately.
Famously.
Brian Kidd did it at Highbury.
Right.
But Tommy Doherty may well have also done it.
It's a very Doherty thing to do.
It is. Below the line, you can add footballers who've also put policemen's helmets on. From the game, we should celebrate Charlie Daniels' strike. It's almost my favourite type of goal, an outside of the boot from that angle into the top corner goal.
Just, yeah, I just felt it screams a bit fluke to me. I don't know.
Really?
No, the thing I liked about it was times out of 10, like modern balls don't often behave like that. A modern ball, if you hit that hard, often does some weird swervy thing. That just went straight.
You can't say... there's obviously an element of luck, but he did try and do that.
Yeah, he did try. He did try and do that. But 9 times out of 10, something else very different will happen. I don't know. Maybe I'm just... Why am I being mean to this poor guy?
You're being mean to Charlie Daniels.
I don't know. Why?
Had that been, you know, Lionel Messi, you'd have said, hey,
well,
yeah.
I'll tell you what now. Gylfi Sigurdsson's goal last week for Everton.
Yeah.
That was almost identical to Jason Cundy's one for Ipswich against... Was it?
Oh, I forget, but early 90s. It was against Spurs, I think.
Almost identical. Gylfi Sigurdsson does it, he's a genius. Jason Cundy does it, he's a galoot who got lucky. You know, there's no justice.
I would suggest Lionel Messi's never kicked a ball that hard.
I think you're probably right.
He could easily have scored from there, but he wouldn't have scored like that from there.
He just dinked it in. Yeah. He'd taken everyone on and scored. I think comparing Sigurdsson and Cundy is almost unforgivable. With all due respect to Jason. But City, look, they look wonderful going forward, City.
In patches.
With that, I mean, I only saw the highlights, but I love the silvers. I can't work out who my favourite silver is.
Yeah, well, I mean, the great thing about Pep is he'll play them all in the team at once. You know, I think he is aiming for a team of 10 attacking midfielders.
And Johnny Evans.
Yeah, exactly, just to hold it all together when Vincent Kompany's injured. But yeah, I mean, I think they went 1-0 down and they bossed the game, and then the second half was pretty even. I mean, it was well into added time where they equalised.
What strikes me about Guardiola teams now is they don't look, or about this City, is they don't look like a Guardiola team. I mean, there's obviously little patches where they hold the ball nicely, but it's not the same, you know, rapid fire passing he had at Barcelona or Bayern, or even City in that first sort of 6 weeks of last season. As if he has sort of got, it just doesn't work here.
Yeah, there was, I think I was at the Brighton game and I was struck by how often they were trying to, you know, Brighton, two big lunking centre-halves, they were trying to dink the ball over the top of them. They were trying for some sort of error movement. And I thought, well, try and get them on the turn on the ground, which would be more what you might expect a Guardiola team to do. I was speaking to my City fan mates, and it's like, we need another defensive midfielder. You know, Fernandinho, and I'm like, well, you've got Fernandinho. It's like, well, Fernandinho doesn't play that way anymore. I was like, what do you mean? It's like, well, he doesn't take up those defensive positions anymore and he doesn't make those tackles. And it's like, oh, what? You mean playing for the coach who doesn't coach tackles means that you don't do tackling anymore?
Johnny Evans, Leicester apparently in for him this morning as well.
I think he's a really good player.
Yeah. And it's interesting because a lot of City fans say, look, he would definitely... The view is from some people that Evans would go there and sit on the bench. And then City fans actually say, well, hang on. He would get in above
Otamendi
for sure.
Well, there's a game. I mean, he had that loan spell at Sunderland when he was absolutely brilliant, apart from the FA Cup game, which I can't remember who was against, but his mistake eliminated us that day. But there's a game away at Cardiff where he produced, I would say, the single best performance by a Sunderland player since Kieran Brady against West Ham.
Wow.
When,
that's some praise.
Yeah. No, it is the highest praise.
I don't know. Sorry, Paul, neither do I, but just...
He was a very gifted...
I nod with a lot of things on this pod. It gets you through.
He was a very gifted left winger who we thought was really lazy, but turned out he had some hideous blood disorder. and he now works as a physio.
Are you overcompensating then? Just
no, that performance was just... That? I mean, you know, in my teenage years, that's probably the best afternoon.
So City've got...
The Johnny Evans thing. Yeah. So About 2:45 at Cardiff, a bright sunny day, suddenly the clouds come in, this gale gets up, so 70 mile an hour wind, Sunderland playing with it first half, Cardiff can't get out of their half, Sunderland are only 1-0 up at half time. It was 0-0 at half time. You saw that second half, we're not going to get hammered here.
That wind is worth three.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, we couldn't get out our half in the second half, and Johnny Evans just took the ball down his chest again and again and again, passed out to somebody who lost it, comes back, he wins it again, passes it out. And eventually Roy Keane, who had it in his phase with a massive beard, he sort of, like he's like Prospero, wanders out to the touchline and glares at the clouds till they part and disappear, which he then throws on Ross Wallace, who, you know, is 2'4". He's even shorter than Che Given. And Ross Wallace scores the winner. But it was Evans and Keane's ability just to govern the weather.
City have got Napoli, Feyenoord and Shakhtar in the Champions League. Another defender similar to that is played at Old Trafford on Saturday, Harry Maguire, I thought had a brilliant game. Manchester United won 2-0. Until Leicester's goal, which was not Maguire's fault, but Craig Shakespeare must be just so angry that after playing and defending so well, it wasn't like Rashford had to lose his marker. He just stood there.
Yeah.
I mean, literally didn't do anything. And then just five Leicester players pointed at him.
And that's the second time, isn't it? I mean, not exactly the same circumstances, but obviously the Arsenal defeat, they were very robust until they weren't. I think, you know, it's the simple thing that they've got numbers to change the game at late moments. You know, Fellaini gets the second, Rashford, you know, you could just perming Martial and Rashford the entire time means you've got somebody running 135 miles an hour at you consistently. It's going to wear you down.
And 7 of their 10 goals have come after substitution this season, 4 of them scored by substitutes. So.
Yeah. Trivia time, courtesy of Opta Joe. Henrik Mkhitaryan has equaled the Premier League record for most assists in his first 3 appearances in a season with 5. Who's the other one? Anyone gets this, I'll give you a pound. The year was 94-95.
Mark Overmars?
Go lower in quality.
Jason Wilcox. Stuart Ripley.
Go lower in quality. A kind of quick winger who never beat his man.
Tony Daly?
Rule Fox?
Oh, that's unfair on Rule Fox.
Is that unfair on Rule Fox? Is that?
He was very good that season at Norwich, and he was reasonably good at Newcastle for a little while.
Yeah. But not better than Ripley. Better than Ripley?
Well, Ripley got more England caps, if that's your defining.
Well, Ripley got a Premier League winner's medal as well, indeed. Didn't he?
I suppose it's up to listeners to believe it or not.
Oh, yeah. Newcastle 3, West Ham 0, and Palace 0, Swansea 2. These are the managers under pressure. Has anyone else noticed, every time Slaven Bilic, as every defeat happens, he gets quieter and deeper, to the point where, if it keeps on going, he'll be completely silent.
It's almost like he smokes really heavily and smokes to compensate for a defeat.
They were pretty poor, West Ham, weren't they?
Dreadful, yeah. I mean, I like Slaven Bilic. He's been very good to me in the past, but...
In what way? Lending you money? What?
When I was writing my book on Eastern European football, he was just very helpful. He took me to a restaurant just above Split, and we had a very good morning, and then he paid the whole thing.
Oh, wow.
Then introduced me to loads of journalists who proved very useful. He's a very nice man.
He's very honest and upfront with journalists, always press conferences before and after. He's always clear about, but he doesn't...
But things aren't going well.
No, he doesn't appear to be able to rectify the mistakes he can observe in press conferences in the next performance. I mean, Newcastle just muscled them completely out of the park, and you know they say about Newcastle that they're full of championship quality players, but championship quality players can do you a job in the Premier League if you're organised enough and determined enough.
I mean, West Ham were absolutely awful, but I think Rafael Benitez is perhaps complaining a bit too much, and maybe he's in a position where he can complain as much as he likes, because if he leaves Newcastle he'll walk into
West Ham.
Another job. Yeah, probably Slaven Bilic's job. But I think that Newcastle side should be more than good enough to finish mid-table.
The point is that the promises were made to him have not been kept.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's the issue. It's not, is this squad good enough? I don't think they are good enough up front. You're relying on Mitrovic, who's very unreliable.
Well, they reckon he might leave this week, and he's going to get a retrospective
ban for the
elbow on Lanzini.
But for the most written-off striker in Britain, Poslu had quite a good game.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
And I also wonder about the Benitez thing, because he is such a... He can't help but meddle, and he can't help but play politics. But I do wonder whether somebody's gone to him, like, listen, this the only way you're going to get Ashley to behave in a way that might remotely kind of correspond to what you've agreed is to put it out in public and to try and... I wonder, because it's so consistently like that.
Yeah. But I just think he's got a point. I mean, if promises have been made to him, he's got every right to... explain when they're broken.
Palace 0, Swansea 2. Frank de Boer under pressure. I think I'm just being told Palace are in for Jose Font. Is that a joke, or is that that's what they're going to do? Is it? I mean, that's just is that going to save them? He's not. He's sort of gone to retire.
Such a huge success at West Ham. It's kind of like he forgot how to play football after leaving Southampton.
This is sort of happening to Zabaleta at West Ham now, isn't it? But. De Boer under pressure. Apparently, they're meeting today to decide whether to keep him or not, which is ridiculous. Sorry, your hand is raised, Paul.
Yeah, just because I went to his introductory press conference, merely 6 weeks ago, and the stuff they were talking about then, Simon Jordan's talking about, is, you know, we want to progress from the Steve Parish. Sorry, yeah. I'm calling in the previous one.
No, you are.
And the thing Steve Parish is talking about. Is we want to progress our style of football. We want to, you know, no disrespect to Sam Allardyce, but we've been with Premier League now for a number of seasons. We want to progress, and the only way we're going to progress is developing our football. And you know, they look at it now, and they're like, well, oh my God, we don't have the players who can play, you know, the Ajax total football style. We can't, you know, we can't switch to three at the back because we don't. Well, don't hire somebody who's going to, you know, whose career limited, you know, patchy as it has been built around that style. You know, it's ridiculous. I think
if you do, give him some time to do it.
Well, yeah, and give him some serious money.
But I mean, I think, you know, the risk of this happening was always there. It's such a radical shift. And then there's some really strange stuff's happened anyway. Like, I think most of pre-season, Andros Townsend plays as a wing-back, and Joel Ward's played every game. Well, Joel Ward's not quick enough to play at wing back. So even if Andros Townsend isn't good enough defensively, at least he's got the pace to get up and down. And it now looks like Andros Townsend's leaving.
Did anybody see James Tompkins' shot, which went 100 yards over the bar? And as it did, he got a groin strain or a hamstring strain. And it was like his groin just said, I want to be no part of James Tompkins. It was just, and he went, right, that's it. That was the last kick. I can't be part of this anymore. Watford 0, Brighton 0. There's only one real thing to talk about in this game, unless you want to bring in other things, which is the kung fu kick of Miguel Britos, which was... It was just unbelievable, wasn't it? It was so ridiculous.
I mean, this has already been a season of really stupid, obvious red cards, but that, I think, is the stupidest, most obvious yet. I suppose at least it was better than Shelby's, that he had a chance of hurting the guy. But Knockhart was very fortunate in some ways. Yeah. It hit the leg that was in the air rather than the one that was planted. But it was just a terrible tackle. And that, the sort of the look of the glance up at the card, I can't believe it's red.
And then the protest. Yeah. It was remarkable. I mean, I watched it. I couldn't watch it often enough. I was just rewinding and rewinding and rewinding.
It's because I was trying to see,
is there any way whatsoever that wasn't a red card? And no.
I play a lot of Saturday football, right? And you see when a player's going to do that. And it's like he set off from about 30 yards away and was like, whatever happens, he didn't even want the ball to be near him. And it was the sort of foul that ends up in a 22-man brawl plus anyone near the pitch plus people on mopeds. You know, it was unbelievable.
Well, I don't know why it preceded it. I mean, the only time you sort of see that sort of foul is if the winger's been just destroying the fullback for pace and the fullback thinks, right, I'm just going to get done every time. So I've just got to try and stop him in whatever way. And I might as well not be here because he beat me every time. So if I'm sent off, so be it. But I mean...
Yeah. But when Britos signed for Watford 2 years ago, he had a reputation as a hothead. He insisted at his introductory presentation that it wouldn't be a problem, then got sent off on his debut, and this was his fourth red card as a Watford player. But so it would suggest he's perhaps not the brightest bulb on the Christmas tree.
Well, as he was so shocked, perhaps he just doesn't understand the rules. I mean, it's quite possible, isn't it? We should say well done to Huddersfield, still unbeaten, drawing 0-0 at home to Southampton. And that'll do for part two. At the start of part three, we'll talk to Sid in Spain. Back in a minute. Welcome back to part three. Let's go straight to Spain. Sid Lowe is there. Sid, how are you?
Very well, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, jolly good, thanks. Let's round up what happened on the pitch in La Liga. A draw for Real, wins for Barcelona and Atletico.
Yeah, the Real Madrid game was a really lot of fun as well. 2-2 draw with Valencia. And I think in a way, obviously the big headlines have all focused on Marco Asensio, who was absolutely brilliant. And I'm genuinely looking at him now and thinking there's a really, really special player here, someone who could go on and do incredible things. In fact, the Valencia manager, Marcelino Arthur, said this is a guy that's going to mark an era at Real Madrid and in Spanish football. Of course, that potentially is bad news for Gareth Bale, who had another poor game and was whistled when he was taken off. But in a way, there's a bit of me that clings more to the other side of the game, which is Valencia, and the feeling that there's something beginning at Valencia now. There's a seriousness about them. There's a sense that one of those really big teams in Spain that should be a big team, that's been a bit of a joke for the last couple of years, could actually be on its way back.
Barcelona's victory, pretty straightforward?
Not really. I mean, it was straightforward in the sense that they had a huge amount of the ball, but they did concede a couple of good chances and could have found themselves in trouble. And it was basically Messi who did absolutely everything. He was playing as a false nine, but also kind of as a deep number six, a number eight at times, a number 10 at other times. Scored two, hit the post, had a penalty saved, and didn't smile once. But they're relying very, very heavily on him at the moment. Although, of course, in the next few days, that could shift because Dembele's going to be presented today. And Barcelona haven't yet given up on other signings.
Sid, just going back to Madrid and Gareth Bale, I remain firmly convinced he's going to sign for Manchester United. Am I mad?
On the face of it, I would say yes. But I think if this market's taught us anything, it's not to believe anything at all and not to be surprised by anything at all. There's no doubt that the exit is there should he want it, but he has repeatedly insisted that he wants to stay. There's absolutely no intention to sell him from Real Madrid's hierarchy, or at least not at the very top of Real Madrid's hierarchy. I think the fact that it looks very much, doesn't it now, like Mbappe is about to go to Paris Saint-Germain, I think that's partly a product of the fact that Real Madrid at that price, were dissuaded, but also because they look at the front three and they look at the players coming through like Asensio and Isco and think, well, where do we put him in the team? And one of the key reasons for that is that belief still in Bale. So I would be very surprised, but as I say, this is one of those markets where anything, I kind of feel like anything can happen now. And, to take Coutinho as an example, you've got Liverpool who are saying that he's absolutely not for sale no matter what, and you've got Barcelona saying that they're relatively confident that they can get him. So someone somewhere is either lying or wrong.
Speaking of Barcelona signings, Paulinho came on in the 88th minute. Did he turn up any trees in that run around?
No, he didn't. No, I mean, and you wouldn't expect him to. I mean, I feel a bit sorry for him, because he's about the only person at Barcelona who hasn't done anything wrong, at least not yet. And because of what he symbolises, he got an awful lot of grief when they first signed him. And there's, I suppose, the possibility that he'll be useful for them.
Yeah, could be. And Dembele, you'd say he's been unveiled, or he's about to be?
He arrived in Barcelona yesterday. We are, as we talk, about an hour away from him doing his first press conference as a Barcelona player. Big headline on the front of Sport today. It was shock news. Big photograph of Dembele. It says, "I want to win titles."
Well, he's allowed to put questions. Will he do more keepy-ups than Paulinho? I seem to be hammering Paulinho.
I'm going
to
defend Paulinho here.
I'll do it.
Because I saw that video of Paulinho doing a couple of really bad kick-ups. But it had been rather cruelly cut. There's kind of 15 or 20 reasonably good kick-ups and then it escapes him. But of course, it's been cut to make it look like he literally kicks it up in the air and then kind of falls over like a clumsy clutch.
Yeah, I did wonder. He only did three in the edited version. Well, it's good it's good that you are defending him. And yeah, he could turn out to be a good, great success, couldn't he? Thanks, Sid. Appreciate your time.
My pleasure.
Talk to Sid Lowe out there. We should talk a bit about Mbappe then. They're trying to get around financial fair play.
He's already driven a coach and horses through financial fair play, haven't they, with the Neymar deal? Yeah. I just don't understand how you can go and do it again.
Well, he's only on loan for a year.
I mean, but it's just saying, don't worry, look at this, don't concentrate on the ball, look at the ball and mucking him around.
Season-long loan with an obligation to buy him for 166 million. So not as if they can say, if he has a really rubbish year, just actually, we just don't really want him.
But his wages have been massive as well, so surely they've got to offload a couple of players. The thing then that baffles me is, why did they let Matuidi leave for 18 million? Like, surely an English club would have bought him for 40. I mean, Yeah. It just seems really odd. So yeah, if I was, say, Tottenham, I'd be on the phone saying 30 for Di Maria, 35?
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely.
He's 18, Mbappe. In fact, this morning I was sitting next to Ray Wilkins going, he's 18. What were you doing when you were 18? And he was like, yeah, is captaining Chelsea. Fair enough. Do you want to look at Italy? I've got some Italy facts. Have you got some, Barry? Do you want to do it?
Just sort of a roundup. Genoa went 2-0 up against Juve after 7 minutes and still managed to lose 4-2. Paolo Dybala with a hat-trick. Inter beat Roma 3-1 in Rome, as I think mentioned already. Edin Dzeko put Roma ahead, but they lost. And wins for Napoli, Milan, Samp and Lazio.
Yeah. And Spal, who won their first top-flight game in 50 years with an injury-time winner against Udinese. Germany, Bayern won 2-0, two goals from Lewandowski. Dortmund beat Hertha Berlin 2-0 with goals from Aubameyang and Nuri Sahin to stay top of the league on goal difference. Hamburg and Hannover beat FC Köln and Schalke to maintain their perfect starts to the season. And Stuttgart beat Mainz 1-0 with a goal from former Bayern defender Holger Badstuber. His first Bundesliga goal since 2009. Paul, would you like to do a championship minute?
I'd love to.
Does it include any League Two? Second clean sheet in a row for Cambridge. A 0-0 draw at home to Morecambe, classic.
Well, what I did observe in League Two was that Paul Tisdale, who's Exeter, a top of the division, yep, was dressed in a simple white shirt with sort of marble effect buttons.
So no cravat?
No cravat.
Interesting.
No plaid, no tweed. No, he was completely clean shaven now. Just looks like any ordinary bald guy.
Okay.
But they won 4-3 coming from two goals down away from home.
I have a bit of League Two trivia.
Oh, I'm like this.
What do Danny Collins, Ben Davis, Sam Jones, James Barrett and Zach Mills have in common?
Are they Welsh left-backs?
No.
They've all played in League Two.
Yes, and they all play for Grimsby.
And they've all,
and
I know
each
this
of them has been sent off so far this season. Grimsby have played 5 games this season, and 4 in the league, 1 in the Carabao Cup, and they've had a man sent off in each one, and they've lost 4 games.
Well, that's entertaining, isn't it?
It's got to be some sort of record.
Yeah.
Quick mention for Leeds.
Yeah, far away.
Leeds are still unbeaten. Andreas Christensen, great start as a manager. And he switched. And the interesting thing is Kamar Roof scored at the weekend after scoring 3 from out wide, I think, against Newport in the Carabao. And he scored at the weekend as a centre forward. And Christensen moved him inside to accommodate a new signing, a Macedonian winger whose name I really can't pronounce, Eskjan Alioski. Mm-hmm. Who then scored the second. So in their win, then that means they're unbeaten. They're in second. Cardiff still top. Beat QPR 2-1. A couple of comedy goals with the Cardiff keeper getting tangled up with Sol Bamba for the first, missing the ball completely. And then Junior Hoylett robbing the keeper for the equaliser. And then Sol Bamba scored the winner. And Wolves, meanwhile, were held away at Brentford 0-0. So you kind of get the feeling that Nuno is sort of experiencing the full range that this division can offer. But the interesting fact of that was afterwards the chairman and the managing director posted a selfie on Twitter and said, we're in this boozer for the next 30 minutes. Anybody who turns up can get drinks on us. Oh, and they duly did.
It's nice, isn't it? This is a question from Phil. Says, Norwich City start of the season. Time for a total regime change or time to bed in the new manager and ride out a disappointing start?
There's really, really bad results. And you know, it's one of those things whereby everybody knew what was coming and they looked entirely unprepared for it. But I think it's 5 games, complete revamp of the squad. I think we've had like 9 or 10 players in, a completely new coaching squad, a coaching setup. I think you've got to stick with it.
There was some enthusiasm for Sunderland the last time, I believe, Jonathan and Barry were together.
Yeah.
Was there a little bit?
I think what I said was pre-season gone surprisingly well. And the start of the season gone surprisingly well.
And now
reality has has returned with a 3-0 defeat at Barnsley.
Hey, should we do a fit bar corner, Barry?
Can do.
Have any players fallen into rivers after a big night out this weekend?
Well, I will get to that in due course.
Okay.
Just get the boring admin out of the way.
I've got another question as well.
Okay, well, Celtic dropped 2 points against St. Johnstone, who are sort of Celtic's bogey team in Scotland, insofar as they actually have a bogey team. They were the last team to beat Celtic in domestic competition.
Was that 1987?
May 2016.
Wow.
Rangers beat Ross County 3-1. But the game of the weekend was undoubtedly at Fir Hill, where Partick Thistle lost 4-3 against Aberdeen. Niall Keown, son of Martin, was scored a goal and got sent off. He's Partick Thistle defender. The highlight of that game came in its aftermath when at 2:46 a.m. on Sunday morning, Aberdeen winger Gary McKay-Stephen, after a night of excess in a local disco dancing emporium, fell off a bridge into the River Kelvin and had to be fished out and was taken to hospital suffering from hypothermia. So we hope he's okay. I'm guessing it was drunken tomfoolery. I hope it wasn't anything more serious. But he's expected to be okay, if possibly a little embarrassed, and is bound to, I would imagine he will welcome the imminent international break in the hope that his teammates will all forget what happened.
Craig did say, is Barry doing Fitbar Corner? If so, what was his favourite goalkeeping gaffe from the weekend? I don't know if you've seen this, Barry. Ross County conceded a goal where the Ross County keeper is called Scott Fox.
I haven't seen this.
Alfredo Morelos, I think he's called, was running through, and the keeper sort of tackled him and managed to get the ball, and then the keeper must have forgotten that he'd just tackled a player who was behind him, and then so stood with the ball at his feet for about 10 seconds. So Morelos just got up and walked over to the ball and then kicked it in, and the keeper looked quite disappointed.
That's sounds kind of similar to the time, was it Gary Crosby, the Nottingham
Forest? No, it wasn't a Crosby or a Dion Dublin, because they had the ball and they put it on the floor.
No, right. Crosby had it off Andy Dibble's part.
Oh, yes, he did. Yes.
Andy Dibble had it in his hand.
In one hand. He only had one hand on it, is a popular shout from, jumpers for goalposts football. No, this guy just totally forgot what had happened a second before. Another tweet, some tweets to finish off. This is from Andy Connor. Just says, do us a favour, say Stockport County twice on today's pod. It doesn't have to be in context. It'll just brighten up my day. Stockport County, Stockport County.
That's three times.
You're right, I take it back.
If you say it twice more, Oliver Holt will materialise in the room.
Speaking of forgetful people, Tim Back says, has Arsene Wenger reached the pleasantly confused grandfather stage, knowing only what he knows and incapable, even if willing, to change? And Shane says, who has a nicer toaster, Max, Barry, Paul or Jonathan?
Mine's standard. My aunt burnt the old one and she bought me a new one, but it was basic Russell Hobbs.
Okay.
Mine's a Russell Hobbs, nothing special.
I don't know what make mine is, but it's red, if that helps.
Well, I have a dual-lit, four slice.
Does not surprise me.
However, mine's a four slicer.
It's a four slicer. Can take a wide slice. However, the timer is caught, and so you have to turn the thing off at the mains, otherwise you might...
Does it have a crumpet setting?
I don't believe it has a crumpet setting.
Okay. Did you borrow it from a top DJ?
Yes, I did. It's Tim Westwood's.
I tend to use the grill anyway, to be honest.
You use your grill for toast?
Yeah.
That's extraordinary.
Not for sliced bread toast, but if I was doing like a muffin or something, I'd use a grill. More controllable with a grill. You can see it.
You can.
Not energy efficient.
But you can't see really toast. If it's under the grill, you can't.
But it's a lot easier to just go... obviously that doesn't really work in an audio medium. I was demonstrating kind of bending, looking under the grill, pulling the grill pan out slightly, and then making a shape with your mouth.
You also have to spin it, don't you? You have to turn it. Interestingly, the Guardian live transfer blog, which is currently taking place, most of the traffic is talking about how Barry and Jonathan helped a woman use a Boris bike this morning.
How do they know about that?
how does the...
These chivalrous men...
Well, I don't like to talk about my many good works, in the service of other people. Jonathan may like to brag.
I haven't mentioned it to anybody. It was
It was spotted by a journalist, Nick Ames.
Oh, he must have been looking out the window. Yeah, you can see down to where the Boris bikes are.
That's the most investigative journalism Nick Ames has ever done.
Anyway, so well done. You helped a passerby.
Well, it was,
and they didn't even know how famous the people helping them were.
Neither of us had ever
got one before.
Got a bar's bike before. We were both astonished by how cheap it
it's
is.
£2 for a day.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
A great deal.
Oh, well, you can't keep it for the whole 24 hours. It's every half hour ride is free. You have to keep logging it in and then getting another one out if you want to go for like a 17 hour bike ride.
That seems needlessly complex.
And what's good is people accuse the Guardian of being London centric and they won't now. Finally, I'm going to introduce a corrections and apologies section to Guardian Football
Weekly.
Did
you kill someone last week?
Well, here's what happened. Last week I inadvertently killed Graham Kelly during the podcast, so we discovered that he was still alive, and so I recorded an apology.
Unfortunately, could you not just have edited the bit where you killed him
well,
out?
Well, here's the thing. We did edit the bit where I killed him off, but we didn't edit the bit where I apologised for killing him off. So I did an apology for something I didn't need to apologise for. Look, I also said that FC Salzburg win the Champions League, which they're not. So if you want to, I blame whoever I cut and pasted that article from. If somebody could keep a tally of mistakes. I'd like feedback corner as well, because I think it's important that we take constructive criticism, not just the rudeness, but constructive criticism seriously. Acre99 below the line said, good to see the swearing was absent from the last pod. Can I go back to listening to the podcast in the car with my kids? Well, for you, Acre99, it's now time to switch off, because we introduce constructive criticism, and I like to tweet out, you know, the link to the podcast, get some new young subscribers, you know, who used to watch Soccer AM in the glory years, 08 to 15. And I sent this out saying, hey, listen to this podcast, to which Dylan F, or at Delby411, whose bio is all for one and one for all smiley face, he wrote, I'd rather shite in my hands and clap, peanut head. I explained that actually it's a podcast, so
You could do it anyway.
So look, if you're listening, Dylan, let us know how the podcast sounds when you're applauding with your own feces. Who said I'd lower the tone of this thing? Barry, thanks for your time.
You're very welcome.
Paul McInnes, thank you.
Cheers.
Jonathan Wilson, well done on the cricket and
thank
your
you
feet.
Much.
Lovely
thanks.
To see you. We'll be back on Thursday. Until then, have a lovely time.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.